welcome to W Rated, the show where we willingly watch the world's worst rated movies. Today, you've joined us on this year's Road to Razzies, our annual season of episodes looking at the nominations for the controversial Golden Raspberry Awards 2024. For new listeners, I'm Daisy, and as always, I'm joined by podcast co-creator, host and editor Claire. Claire, would you like to tell us which film we're talking about this episode?
We are talking about Ghosted, which is nominated for 3 awards, including Worst Actor for Chris Evans, Worst Actress for Ana de Armas, and its final award is for the Worst Screen Combo for both Ana de Armas and Chris Evans. Brackets, who flunked screen chemistry. So only the 3 noms and all for the acting. Straight up at the start, I'm genuinely surprised. Where the fuck is the screenplay and directing nominations for this film?
I think it probably deserves that more, right?
The acting's poor as well, but one of the worst screenplays I've seen in a while. Really surprised this was not nominated for more.
It's just yet another example of a really underbaked screenplay. It's like all concept, no development, right? It's like, wouldn't it be interesting if we've got the name of the film, it's called Ghosted. How do we now make this work? And it's like, okay, here's the plot synopsis. And then it's almost as if it's like they wrote scene by scene, like, how do we get from this, from A to B here? How do we get from A to B here?
So, not to be in defense of the film, I'm going to see if I can actually find it now. So it's directed by Dexter Fletcher. I can't find the exact quote, but I remember when it came out at the time, he said that actually it was really weird. So he was in the edit room when it was being edited and they completely recut the film because it was going on Apple and because it was an Apple streaming film. And they said that they had statistics based on algorithms that would tell them that people needed certain things to happen within certain times, or they, if they're watching at home, they'll click off. And so he said opening was meant to be different. But I'm going to see if I can find it while we're talking, to see if I can find the direct quote. But he said it was a really interesting way of making a film. So I think he was trying to cover his arse, that he didn't want to piss off Apple, but he was like...
interesting way. Damn. That's really scary, actually, isn't it? Because that's what we kind of feared was going to happen with this art form, and it clearly is.
Yeah, because I was going to say, because I've not seen a lot of Dexter Fletcher films, but I've seen Rocketman, which is the Elton John.
I thought that's what... And I love that.
It's such and a like, beautiful film.
And when it comes... When you're thinking about direction and pacing and, like, craft...
That film is so
You wouldn't
so
assume
good.
They're the same.
The flow of that film is stunning. And so, yeah, sorry, it was when he was on... That's why I couldn't find it. It was when he was on Alex Sames' A Trip to the Movies podcast, and he said there's different metrics and a different approach. You can't make a film for streaming the same way you make a film for theatrical. And according to the director, part of the approach was cutting the film in a way that drew audiences immediately, which he says meant trimming down what Apple TV saw as fat. And he said the film's opening sequence, which Fletcher says was inspired by 1978's Foul Play starring Chevy Chase and Goldie Hawn, was initially a long shot of Sadie driving in the mountains until the streamer shut it down. Fletcher says Apple TV's reasoning came down to data that demonstrates that when viewers watch a film on streaming, if something doesn't happen in the first 30 seconds, people would just turn off. Although he personally thought the roughly 3-minute sequence was great, he ultimately agreed to make the compromise. And he said that approach to cuts highlights one of the biggest differences between crafting a film for theatrical versus streaming. What is a cinematic experience for me as a filmmaker becomes... okay, I've just got to retain my audience.
That's bad.
And having watched this film, it did not retain me as an audience member.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, okay, so if we're going to do that, I'd at least feel like it should have ended up feeling like it works. And I think this just goes to show that algorithm data with art forms, like, it just doesn't mix.
And it's like you said, I think it was written as it was written, and you said to you it felt like it was written with sequence, just figuring out how to tie it together. I would imagine, actually, so maybe that's why it didn't get a screenplay nom, that the original screenplay probably had beautiful reasoning as to how it got from A to B and how these things happened, and then it was
But everything was trimmed, each side. It was like each scene was just like, let's just get to the main. But you're right, it's like, it's almost like, it's like the Turing test of films, right? Is that we haven't got to a point where you can make artificial intelligence work for you, but we know it's done, therefore we don't connect to it.
Yeah.
It completely defeats the object, because we know we're, the reason we love movies is we're connecting to other people through them. And if it's cut to shreds because of what data's telling you, that might work for... It's basing it on like aggregated data. It says, oh, okay, so 80% of people will turn it off if this doesn't happen. But if you look at it like a flow chart, it's not 100% of people. So you're actually losing people at every point, because you're not, because you're basing it on a, it's like a odds of whether things are going to work. And if you're not actually thinking about, well, what works historically as an art form in storytelling, to kind of, even if people aren't 100% bought into that bit, that really worked. If you're, it's just that you're just actually getting rid of people. It's doing the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought this film was a mess. I thought it was so boring. I thought it was badly made. There was some really, really dodgy CGI parts.
Just looked so cheap.
It looks really cheap. Like, as I said to my friend I was texting at the time, I was like, this had Apple money. Like, this had Apple money. Where'd the Apple money go?
It's like, I usually rate higher than I really feel, which I've mentioned before. I'm now I'm reviewing, I'm accurately reconsidering my ratings. And I thought that I'd probably overdone this one. And I mean, judging by my ratings from last year, we know that they're probably half a star higher.
Because you didn't watch this for you chose to watch this of your own volition.
Well, I say chose. I've got myself into a little bit of a pickle where I've given myself another challenge outside of the podcast, which is watching the most popular film on IMDb every week. And I've said it before, I'll say it again, we don't have any taste as a collective. The amount of films that I've watched because of that are now nominated for Razzies, like... You know that whole Venn diagram meme? They are a circle. They are a circle. It was kind of easy to watch, like, kind of. It was just a bit slop being fed to you kind of thing. So it wasn't the worst thing in the world. But I do think I'm being much more discerning now because of the amount of films like this I've watched over the last year or so. Mm. It's like, no, actually, this isn't good enough.
Yeah, no. And, like, I think the thing, so looking at the nominations, it's Chris Evans, Ana de Armas, and then Chris Evans and Ana de Armas are the three noms. I don't think they're so much the main problems of this film, but I don't think they're... Chris Evans isn't underserving. I've seen Chris Evans in rom-com mode. I've seen him in Captain America mode. I've seen him in broody indie star darling dad mode. He's a good actor. He can do loads of stuff. He is bad in this film. I thought he was terrible in this film.
Oh, see, I thought more about Ana de Armas.
Whereas I thought she was better. I thought the problem of Ana de Armas was the wig. The wig was so distracting.
The wig was so distracting.
I couldn't concentrate on Ana de Armas because the wig was so bad. So
why is she wearing a wig when her hair is like that?
I searched the internet, Daisy. I searched the internet. No one knows. So one theory is that she had her natural dark brunette hair for when they were filming it, so she wore the wig. Apart from right at the end, the final scene, she got her natural hair. And so someone on the internet has come up with the theory that either she was wearing the wig in the film to hide her identity, or she's dyed blonde because she could never really be her true self with anyone. And so when we see her dark brunette at the end, it's because she's finally her true self. And then the theory that I came up with was probably they were told in an algorithm that if she had dark hair, she looked like a villain. And that if she had lighter hair, she'd look more innocent and more trusting. I've decided that was...
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense because of what we've just discussed, that they would make...
I think a focus group would say, lighten her hair.
Yeah, putting a wig to please a bit of data versus thinking this wig looks awful and it's going to be distracting.
She's one of the most stunning women in the world, and her dark hair is one of the most beautiful things about her because of her eyes and the way it brings
out
her features.
This washed her out.
Yeah, really washed her out.
Majorly.
And it made her look really, and again, I don't know if that was the point, it made her look really whimsy and waspy and tiny and frail. And I'm like, so you're telling me she's one of the best spies ever? Yeah. Whereas just when she had the dark brunette hair in the last film, I was like, I trust her more now.
Yeah, I would say I was more disappointed with Anna Armas because we know, you know, like Knives Out, they were together in that.
So much chemistry.
We know that they've got chemistry.
Yeah.
It's just unfortunately if you haven't got good writing and your dailies are being chopped to shit, that it probably doesn't, and I think it doesn't help as well that everything looks so fake.
It constantly looked
like it was against not even a green screen but a bloody Teams background.
Did you see all the articles before the film came out of where you could see that the shots had been digitally altered and everyone was trying to guess, did they actually even film it together? There was like this hilarious article because of one particular shot, people were like, did they even meet each other?
Oh yes, I remember this.
The film. Did they just film this film separately? Which was brilliant. I think for me, I felt like Chris Evans was miscast. Like, he's meant to be playing this really ditzy, clingy, like, he's playing the typical female character of he's too obsessed with them and he loves them and he's a clingy, you know, woman person. I actually thought that should have gone to someone like Channing Tatum. I think Channing Tatum does Himbo so much better. I believe Channing Tatum is a ditzy.
It would have certainly been funnier.
Much funnier. I think that's the thing. I think Chris Evans was scared to lean into the funny. He's done funny, like in Not Another Teen Movie, he plays an absolute idiot. And I know that's a parody and it's not an amazing film, but he's so stupid and charming and goofy and sexy and in that film. I feel like here he was a bit scared to go.
He's too Captain Americanized now.
Yeah. He was scared.
But that being said, I didn't initially think that. I thought he did an okay job at that. Like, I think the problem is that I was looking at it from a, well, this is what they gave us. I didn't believe it as a film, but I could see, I was like, I appreciated his effort because I was like, oh, okay, well, I can see Chris Evans is going for something a little bit different. Like, I do, for as much as I can believe this guy is that guy when he looks like Chris Evans. Whereas you're right, someone like Channing Tatum, regardless of what he looks like, he leans into the physicality so much that he does become that character.
Yeah, like, it was just the sequence. I think that's what I never believed him as a character, and the central conceit of the film is that she ghosts him because he texts her too much after their first date, and then he stalks her to England. And I just never believed that he, as a character, would ever do that, regardless of where he looked. Because even the scenes where he's texting her, he's just texting her normally. Like, I'm not even a double texter. I'm like a gazillion texter. I am a bad, horrible, clingy person, and it's why I'm still single at 34. One day I'll find my clingy dream man like Chris Evans. But when I'm sending the double text, I get risky text face and I get stressed and I go to send it and I delete it and I go to send it and delete it. And then when I've sent it, I panic. Chris Evans was just sending it like a normal text and then looking at his phone and sighing. And I was like, babes, if you're a clingy multiple texter person, you're crawling into a pretzel telling yourself you're an idiot. You're not, I don't know. As I am that person, I did not believe Chris Evans as that person.
And I think that's just one of many, many examples of how this film looks like movie stars on a set pretending to be people. This isn't believable in the slightest at any level.
And I also think it was just a gender swap version of a film we've seen 100 times. It was just, you know, okay. So normally it's the suave, sexy spy and then the ditzy girl that falls in love with him and ends up on the adventure, and it's that thing of like, they gender swapped it, which is totally fine because it can work the other way. You know, I've had some very clingy exes as well. Men can be clingy. Men love love too. But I feel like they literally just gender swapped it and didn't do anything else. Like, they didn't adjust the characters to how a man would act in that situation and how a woman would act in that situation.
But I don't even think they lent into... It could even have been slightly subversive for them to lean into their masculine and feminine energies.
Yeah.
more, like, given that, you know, like you say, the gender swapped, what Chris Evans was doing with the clinginess is, mm-hmm. is typically shown as a female in that, and they didn't even really lean, and I'm not saying I want it to be stereotypical, but mm-hmm. like you're saying, they're not, but they've swapped it, but then it's just like, I'm gonna do the thing, my character's not doing the thing, I'm just gonna do the thing. And it's just, and I just didn't believe. And I do think the wig has a lot to be...
it made her look too innocent.
But I think the point of what you were making is it made her look washed out, made her look ill. For her.
Yeah.
For her. Any day I look like that, like, obviously I'm like laughing, but she didn't look... I don't know, like, at the beginning when they're, like, meeting and stuff, yeah, I can kind of, like... It did make her look a little bit more like mm-hmm. a normal person versus a Hollywood actress. But I'm sitting there going, that's Ana de Armas, and she doesn't look like Ana de Armas.
Yes,
She didn't, whereas other people completely transform for their roles. Yeah. That's great. Like, I'm thinking, like, Mariah Carey in Precious, mm-hmm. like, unrecognizable. Isn't that kind of film? But it looks silly to make someone who looks like Ana de Armas look different. Like... But you've not done it right. It's like, if you're going to try and make her not look like Ana de Armas, like, you've got to do better than that wig.
Like, I didn't see James Bond, but what I heard of the last James Bond film was her sequence was the best thing about it, and she was amazing in it, and everyone wanted to go off and follow her character and see her be a kick-ass spy or whatever she was. So then here we get her being a kick-ass spy in a movie, and it just seems really watered down.
It's not really, though, because it's like... I don't know. It just doesn't feel like anyone's leaning into actually wanting to do the stuff. It's just standing around. And I mean, I haven't watched this film since I watched some clips. So I can't remember if I really watched much. I didn't really watch much of the action. I just mm-hmm. tried to find scenes where they were together. But I don't remember being blown away by the action sequences. I don't know
really
if they
cool.
did their own stunts.
It's very CGI
also,
heavy.
That's the other thing I was going to say as well, is that it's really hard to... If you're going to do this type of film where the guy is thrown into a world of spies and he's then used as an asset and he doesn't know what he's doing, don't use Captain America. Because it doesn't... It just... That point of now suddenly he's going to be the tax man and all of this, it's like, well, yeah, of course I believe it.
Yeah, and when he was feigning confidence, unfortunately, our brains are like, God, that's a confident man. And you can't believe that he's feigning it. You're like, no, he's the most confident man in the world.
Yeah, so it's just a bit of... It didn't need to be a miscast if the screenplay was stronger, but then we just heard about the edit. So I just unfortunately feel like, again, this is just another example of really lazy filmmaking where, they think two movie stars, a serviceable plot, plopped on Apple TV Plus is to get people to watch. Oh, it's better that they watch 50 minutes rather than 25. Is not a good film.
Yeah,
so that's not how good films are made.
No, it's sad. It's a shame. We want the rom-com renaissance, but this was not it. We also, though, don't want men stalking us to different countries. That's not cute.
That was really weird. I didn't like that at all.
No.
And again, it's just like...
And that's done because of a male writer, because I feel like a woman writer would never have done that. A woman writer would know how instantly uncomfortable that would make the majority of the female audience.
That's the thing as well. It's like, not only are you not thinking about... And I'm not saying this has to be super grounded, but it needs to make... You need to believe in its world, right? We were talking about Fast X before, and you were like, this is so ridiculous. I was like, but I'm bought into that world now. I know how that world works. With this one, I don't know... There's not enough world building and, like, establishing of how characters work and all of this for me to really, like... It's just so surface level. It's like, and this person texts this person. I liked, like, little details, like, oh, he left his inhaler there.
The minute they were like, let's run up the stairs, and she was like, why don't you put my stuff in your bag? I was like, he's going to accidentally leave his stuff in her bag, and then that's how they're going to reconnect after she goes to him.
Yeah, so it needs to be, again, it's just a case of you're signposting stuff too much. You don't trust... That's just a classic thing of not trusting your audience.
Yeah.
And it's just... just very pedestrian, and it's fine, you know. But again, like I said, it's because it's almost as if they've gone, well, we need, let's work backwards. And most people work backwards. They know how they want their story to start and end, and then they fill in that, you know, that's fine. But when you're doing it scene by scene and you're not kind of finessing it, it's so obvious to the audience that you're like, okay, so that happens so that we get them, not, oh wow, that's how they ended up there by these, you know, the sequence of events that unraveled. It's, oh, that has to happen so that there's the rest of the film.
Yeah. And I would say it was written by four white men. I don't think any rom-com need, well, I assume actually, I might be incorrect there. I've decided there are white based on the spellings of their names, but not all of them have pictures on Wikipedia. But definitely three white men, and definitely all men. I just don't think any film about a female superhero should maybe be written by that group of people. I don't know.
I think especially if we're not getting the other perspective as well. Yeah. It's just a bit like, if you want every demographic to, if you want different demographics, I should say, to engage with your films, you need diversity behind the camera and in front of the camera. And it's just like, we get it. You guys are happy in your cushy little jobs and you think you know stuff because you've got your AI now. And it's just like, but they don't care because they put this stuff out. People watch it, me. People go to the cinema, spend their money. People pay for Apple. People pay for this. So, of course, they're not going to do anything different.
I do feel like Dexter Fletcher learned some lessons, and I'd be interested to see what he does next. I got the impression he did not enjoy working for a streamer, but then we see that, you know, the streamers are the only ones that have money, so does he have the choice of not working with a streamer again? It'd be interesting to see.
It's so sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because then you think about, like, Killers of the Flower Moon and stuff, and you know they did not tell Marty to do one thing. But that's fine because he's a very, very established, one of the best, one of the greatest. Yeah. But what is it? I'm at this point now, like I said, after watching these films that are so popular for so long and being like, this is the kind of drivel. And I know there are amazing films out there that I'm not seeing, and that's my fault. But it's been a really interesting study to say, okay, well, if I'm watching the most popular and this is what everyone's watching, I know there are better films out there, but the masses deserve better as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
People who go to the cinema two or three times a year to see big tentpole stuff, this shouldn't be the standard of those things.
Yeah.
Even streamers.
Well, the execs, and I think Issa Rae was giving some very good quotes this week. I don't have them to hand. But, like, the execs don't know what makes it, and the execs, it's not the filmmakers, it's not the actors, it's the executives who don't watch these films, who don't understand art, who only understand how to make stocks look good on a spreadsheet.
I did hear someone, because it's the business, I'd be interested to see when this change from, you know, I don't know what they were like before, but, you know, you've got the old Hollywood execs, like the heads of MGM and all of that, and then they obviously had their successes, but when did it suddenly become just businessmen who are running these things?
When the streamers took over, because they're tech bros, they're not art bros.
Gotcha.
That's been the biggest change. Obviously, there's been stuff going on for years and the downfall was already there, but the biggest change has been that they are,
and studios had their own issues, of course. But
they are running these
just
companies like tech firms, and they are not and have never been tech firms.
Which makes sense, because when you think about things like, oh, we made all of our social media logos blue because blue makes people want to, you know, it's all of that kind of attitude, isn't it? A shame.
I think all three nominations are probably deserved, though I feel bad for Ana de Armas. I definitely think the chemistry one is 100% deserved, which makes no sense because they had so much chemistry in Knives Out. I feel like their chemistry...
That's why it's deserved, though, because we know that they can do better than this.
And I'm genuinely surprised it didn't get more nods.
I don't think that... if you're going to nominate them for chemistry, that's fine, but they can only do so much with the screenplay and direction. I think just even a nod to that probably should have happened.
Just a bad film.
I mean, I definitely feel like I was pretty indifferent to it when I watched it last year. And I think it's just because I do like both actors. Mm-hmm. And it was, like I said, it was just easy slop to kind of ingest. It was very glossy. It was just, it was just one of those things where it wasn't, and it's the kind of genre that I don't mind as much. It's like a bit of an action comedy. It's trying to be a rom-com, so I was a little bit hopeful there, and it was fine.
I think that's why I disliked it so much, because I was like, I need it to be better.
Because now I've broken it down and thought about it, and, you know, I'm much more, as I say, trying to be a bit more, because it's got to the point where it's like the straw that broke the camel's back. There's so many of these films that I've watched last year that I'm like, is this just the standard of, like, mass entertainment now?
It is.
We don't want that. It is.
I mean, but that's why the teens are rewatching 7 Years of Suits instead, because they're like, please, just give us something that has...
Wow, character development. Character arcs. Wow.
Longevity.
Character motivation.
Yeah, yeah. Actual storylines that last and develop.
Yeah, this is it. I'm watching Sopranos at the moment.
I know, so I'm really jealous. Obviously. I've never watched it. I actually feel like I should try and watch it with you, catch up, and we could watch it like separate but together, because I've never seen it.
Yeah, you should do that, because Stephen had it on DVD. Mm-hmm. So we were going to watch it on Sky, but then stupid adverts just constantly like breaking up. It was a bit annoying. So it's like really old school, like DVD with the menu, and it looks doesn't look 100% great. But I love that because it takes you back.
Yeah.
You know, I'm over these hyper glossy things that don't look real.
Yeah.
So
I feel you.
Yeah, no, I really recommend it. Really recommend it.
Maybe I'll try and catch you up, piggyback onto you. I mean, I think that sums up our opinion of Ghosted. We'd rather watch a TV show from the 90s.
This is true. Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and we hope you can join us for another mini episode as we tackle another Razzie-nominated film on our road to Razzies 2024.